1998, 9 a.m. And we have this morning a continuation of the Workforce Development Results-Based Government Work Session. And Senator Torgerson will continue to lead the discussions. I believe today we're going to do the Department of Education and Health and Social Services. For the record, I know that Senator Donnelly is on the morning flight, but Senator Parnell and Senator Phillips are both in the building and will be joining us. There is a 10 a.m. Joint leadership meeting that Senator Sharp and I are supposed to go to. So, Senator Torgerson, we will stay here until 10 and then leave you all to it from then until 11. And whatever Mr. Hugh and Senator Adams can get into, we'll just put up with. So,
okay.
With that, Senator, let me just say that tomorrow's schedule, Tuesday morning, we have a number of bills. They've been posted and will begin at 8:30 a.m. Tomorrow afternoon at 4:30, we'll have another results-based work session and that's the Department of Education and the Head Start program.
Madam Chair.
Adams.
Madam Chair, with that announcement, I'm very interested in the committee substitute for the education bills. When can I get copies of that so we can look at that before tomorrow morning?
Senator Sharp.
As soon as drafting gets done with them.
Okay.
If,
and
if we don't have them by late this afternoon, we'll roll it till Thursday.
Okay. And the next question is, if we do have it by, are we going to have the runs also, the district runs that goes along with the committee substitutes?
I think what we'll, I don't know. When the drafter gets that CS put out, we'll immediately request runs on it. But my intention is to have the drafter go through the CS in front of the committee and then questions to the drafter, set it aside and get full runs from DOE before we dig into it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And Senator Adams, we have a number of other bills on the schedule tomorrow morning that will probably keep us busy, whether or not we have a CS for Senate Bill 36. I did not mention at the table our Senators Pearson Sharp, along with Senator Torgerson, Senator Adams, and Senator Parnell. With that, Senator Torgerson, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Today we will start out with the vocational education programs. We will then go to AvTech, which the director should be on teleconference. The Alaska Career Information System will be third. Adult Basic Education will be fourth, and then School to Work. And I was not provided anything on vocational rehabilitation, so we'll have to pick that up at a different time, I guess. So with that, whoever from the department, if you'd please join us and identify yourselves for the record. And then we'll go into mission statements.
Barbara Thompson, Director of the Division of Teaching and Learning Support, and I have with me Sally Sadler, who heads up the School to Work program, School to Work Initiative.
Okay. And you're ready with vocational ed? Okay.
The mission of the vocational education program is to improve vocational education specifically for members of special populations through the administration of the federal Carl D. Perkins grants.
Okay. Is that the only funding source, is the Carl Perkins?
The only federal funding source, yes. There are foundation funds related to vocational education.
So I question this because you've, you're saying the only, well, is the Carl Perkins criteria the one that we use for our vocational ed, for funds that come from other sources, general fund monies and the rest of it?
This mission applies to the federal funds. The grants that are issued to school districts, though, are used to enhance and supplement existing vocational education programs within school districts.
Ms. Kyle.
Yes. Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Maybe define to me members of a special population and that criteria, if it would help me.
The Federal Act lists a number of what they consider to be special populations, populations that might experience barriers in
offenders, single parents, economically and academically disadvantaged, minority populations, handicapped populations, and dropouts.
Are high school students the primary target for this?
75% of the grant award, federal grant award, goes to school districts. Some of the other funds from this grant are issued competitively and may go to school districts or other educational entities.
Primarily high school?
Primarily high school. The secondary funding is primarily high school.
Do you know the percent that might go into the university system?
Of the approximately 15% of the total award.
Any questions on the mission statement? More questions. Go ahead with the activities, please.
What you have before you are activities of the staff within the Division of Teaching and Learning Support. A major one is issuing and administering grants and contracts, and there's a laundry list of what is included in that. It's not a simple process of issuing a grant and never seeing the grantee again. It's an ongoing process of throughout the year working with the grantees, their scopes of work, program revisions, budget revisions, as well as monitoring and reporting. The other large activity provided through TLS, Teaching and Learning Support, is to provide leadership in vocational education for special populations, and leadership is defined as the integration of academic and vocational education, providing professional development, program assessment, curriculum development and dissemination, work in the area of education technology, support for student leadership organizations, and collaboration with business community and employers.
How much flexibility do you have in moving monies from one of those components to another?
In which components?
Oh, let's take school to work versus vocational ed or something. I have a list here that this money goes into coming out of some of your preamble, but it goes to voc ed, school to work, technology, Title III, charter school, statewide testing, goals 2000, and so forth, school accreditation. You mentioned a couple more that aren't on my list. So my question is, how do you allocate this money between these particular programs, and if there's flexibility to go to pick, let's take vocational ed as the number one area you'd like to fund, or increase that?
The funding that is included in the quality schools component for vocational education is from the Carl D. Perkins Vocational Education Act. There are specific regulations for that act, federal regulations, that define how the funding is to be used, what it is to be used to target. There is some flexibility within that grant for districts to meet the needs of their local programs by emphasizing areas. But there isn't a shifting of funds from vocational education to school to work or to any other program. It is a discrete program.
And your districts must apply for this as a grant?
Yes. It is a formula. The amount that goes to school districts is distributed through a formula but they still have to, districts still have to submit a plan of service that meets the federal requirements and addresses special populations.
What's the interaction between what you're doing here in the ARIC Committee, the Human Resource Investment Council?
The Governor's Council for Vocational Education was collapsed and falls under the purview of the ARIC. And that body, the Governor's Council, had acted as an advisory council for the vocational education program, and the ARIC still maintains that responsibility.
Even though our mission on this one is to administer the Carl Perkins grant, aren't we supposed to get more federal money through welfare reform to go to vocational training centers like the one in Seward or Kotzebue, for instance?
I'm not aware of additional federal welfare funds. I know the Department of Health and Social Services will be speaking after us and may be able to provide more information.
Okay.
We'll have to hold that. I think there is additional funds that's earmarked, but it's not...
in this one. Okay. Thank you.
Other questions? Okay, go on. Perform priorities, please, and then your performance measures. Let's group them together.
We listed two desired results, increase the availability of courses, vocational education courses in school districts, and to increase the number of teachers trained in applied academics and technology. There is a major thrust of this federal act to integrate academic and vocational education, to have an applied approach to those areas.
Senator Phillips.
This is probably more to you. On the performance measures, shouldn't we have a third dot there saying percentage of those employed? Because that's the end result, is it not?
In the end, once students, for some of the programs, yes, it is, and for the secondary programs, it is the offering of courses that hopefully will lead to further training, education, and employment. Yes. Yes.
Your sole purpose is to get people employed. Is that not correct?
The sole purpose of the program, the bottom line, yes, in the end.
Okay.
But there are, right,
line.
There could be steps in between, yes.
So, Mr. Chairman, shouldn't we have some kind of measurement of those being employed as a measurement of whether they're successful? I mean, you can always do numbers by increasing this, increasing that, but what are we doing? And I've had a lot of complaints over the years on this one. I think, the measurement, you should be judged by how many people you actually train or retrain and, you know, get in the job market.
Senator Phillips, I don't disagree. A huge portion of this is high school students.
I understand.
Which I would, we also know we have large portions of dropouts and other people who don't go on to college. But along that same line, what is the interaction between this and school to work? I would assume that if your target is to, or one of your targets is to employ people, then school to work would be a very important function, almost to be integrated right in with this vocational program.
Yeah. I guess the best way to explain school to work is that it is a comprehensive system which takes into account separate funding streams that all have the same objective of helping make sure students have that smooth transition to the world of work. So there is a very strong link to that. But the important thing to remember is that School to Work is not ongoing program operations, but it's venture capital to get programs, to get people to work together with different funding streams to be sure that students have high academic standards, that they have a work-based experience, that they have career development, and that they have the opportunity to really apply what they know and they learn in school to what they'll do in the world of work when they leave.
Yeah, that's a good overview, but I guess I don't still understand. Let's maybe put it this way. If a person was in a vocational training in a high school, would he also be registered in a school-to-work program?
Yes. Vocational education is one way of accomplishing a school-to-work experience for a student. There are many ways that a student can be engaged in school-to-work system building. They could be involved in an apprenticeship program. They can be involved in service learning, as long as they're getting that education and how they apply that to the world of work. And there are a variety of experiences and situations in which a student can receive or accomplish that objective.
Do you have any idea how many students that take vocational education actually end up working in that field that they took the voc ed in?
Do you want to go ahead?
We have some information.
I realize some of this, like shop, is voc ed, and they don't go on to be.
Take on to your question here.
Yes, go ahead.
Is there a follow-up mechanism that you have in place to measure this?
There is no follow-up mechanism at this time.
But I guess I would like to add to that under the school-to-work effort, one of the things that we're doing in examining performance measures is to set up, at this point what we're doing is we're looking at more progress indicators, how many students are involved in school-to-work, work-based learning, how many employers are involved, those kinds of connections. But I understand your point. How are we measuring where they actually are? Given that school-to-work began in Alaska in 1996, when we really started rolling the dollars out, students are just beginning to have those experiences. It won't be until they complete high school and complete some post-secondary training that we'll be in a position to be able to measure that. One of the objectives of the initiative is to set that framework into place so that we can look at those kinds of measures.
Is that in place now?
No, that's not in place right now.
So would that be fair to put as a measure the number of students attaining employment? Is that not a fair measure now?
I guess I would want to qualify it because students can get employment in a variety of capacities. Do you want to measure their employment involvement in any job, in an occupation for which they're trained? Do you want to measure duration in a particular position? So I think you can look at it, but you have to understand what it is you're measuring.
Well, I think that's what we're asking you.
I think that's one of the things we'll be working on. That is one of the things.
You listed four or five different options.
Mm-hmm.
You can follow up with that throughout all those options so we can take a look and see what the real world looks like.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly one of the outcomes objectives of the School to Work initiative.
In school to work, I know we're going to get into that a little later, but does School to Work get Carl Perkins money also?
School to Work does not get Carl Perkins money. School to Work dollars come to Alaska through the Federal School to Work Opportunities Act, and Alaska is one of 37 states that currently has federal funds to build, you know, that venture capital to build this initiative and this system. There are other states that have, all states have engaged in planning for their school to work, but what we do is take the school-to-work money and leverage the vocational education and say those students who are enrolled in vocational education are getting academic content, they're getting work-related experiences that will lead them to a particular pathway or a particular occupation. So we're not using the money, but if you think of school-to-work as kind of the glue that holds together the kind of programs that actually provide services.
Back to your, that's okay, that's fine. We needed to understand that, I think, but especially in line of Senator Phillips' question. I'm trying to understand how a school district would apply for the Carl Perkins money. Are they required to submit a plan to, let's say, like your department, and then you would approve whatever that plan is, and then they must spend the money in that plan?
That's correct. The plans are annual plans.
Versus the general fund or foundation formula portion, you're not required. You qualify, but you're not required to spend the money in the area you qualify in.
That's correct.
Okay. let's consider adding the third bullet under performance measures, and since this is a working draft, what we're doing now, we are going to get back together before we finish up these final reviews. So, but I think Senator Phillips is correct, and especially as far as what amount of money that we might put into the university system or AvTech or other training institutions that are not high school. I mean, I could see that some of the high school courses would be hard to make employment a measure unless you're a senior. But then I also can see that if you are a senior and plan on staying in the community and not going on to future colleges or other higher education, that that we should be tracking this and offering something for that population. Any other questions on any component here? Okay, thanks. I guess we have Fred Esposito on the line now. Okay, we'll go to online then. Fred Esposito, are you there? Fred?
Good morning. Yeah, hi.
Okay. All right. Go ahead and start with your overview, if you would, please. This is on Alaska Vocational Technical Center. Start with the mission statement.
Mission statement for the Alaska Vocational Technical Center is AvTech provides market-driven vocational technical training to train Alaskans for available jobs.
Okay. We have a definition of market-driven.
Market-driven is training programs that are in response to the employment market. We don't want to be providing training programs that lead folks to nowhere. They could be great programs that are providing good folks with good skills, but then once they leave us, there are no jobs. So we want those programs that we deliver to be directly tied to the needs of the marketplace.
Any questions on the mission statement? Okay, go ahead.
Unique contribution. AvTech has a long-standing successful history in partnering with business and industry, other governmental agencies, Alaska Native organizations, and others to train Alaskans for available jobs.
Okay. Fred, can you tell us how you'd react to a shortage of skilled labor in a particular segment of what you have under activities?
The way that we would react is that in response to the needs of industry, business and or industry, we can be responsive to create programs that will meet their specific needs. Right now, that to create new programs in response to those needs, we would need to work directly with industry. In terms of providing the specific training that they need, and also in terms of the funding from industry that we would need to provide that program.
Okay.
Take an existing program. We can change existing programs and add elements to those programs according to the needs of industry, and that can happen and does happen on a continual basis, according to the feedback that we receive from industry.
And how much Carl Perkins money do you get through your organization?
Right now, we don't receive any.
Isn't that strange? Vocational education, you don't get any money for.
Do they
apply? Do you apply for it?
There are some post-secondary funds that were released, I believe, last August, we submitted a grant to provide corrections training in conjunction with Spring Creek, something that we had been doing on an ongoing basis. The proposal was not funded. Quite honestly, it was not a well-written proposal. We are preparing to partner with the Department of Education, TLS division, in using some Carl Perkins leadership dollars over the next year and a half. And so we're in ongoing conversations and discussions right now to negotiate the use of Carl Perkins leadership funds at Avtech.
Okay, maybe I'll ask you, they have to apply to receive the money, I would assume. Avtech, who?
The project that Brett is talking about is something he would not have to apply for. The leadership funds could be given to Avtech through a reimbursable services agreement.
What about Kotzebue? Does Kotzebue get any Carl Perkins, do you know?
No, they Kotzebue don't. Perkins. Nor have they applied.
I'm just wondering, well, that's what I'm trying to get at. Is the reason they're not is because they haven't applied?
Their application would be considered if they applied.
Well, I guess just a general statement. It seems odd to me that we have vocational money for education and our two institutions that provide that aren't getting any money. Doesn't that seem a little odd to you?
Well,
that's right. You don't need to answer that. Fred, I think we have the activities in front of us. You don't need to go through that. Let's go right down. Senator Adams.
No, just it's under activities. It's some of the training, Fred, in mining and fisheries. You got the introduction to Lauren. That's old-fashioned now, isn't it? You should be teaching GIS electronics?
GPS, and in fact, we are teaching GPS.
Okay, there. Thank you.
Senator. This is Senator Pierce. How many of your students come from areas of the state other than Seward?
Well, we have our full-time student population right now is about 49% from rural areas of the state. So I can't tell you exactly what percentage is from Seward and what percentage is not from Seward, but small percentage is actually from Seward, I would say. I'm going to guess at about 10% or less for our full-time student population. But we do know regionally what the breakdown is.
If I could ask another question, what's your breakout men and women?
I can get back to you with that.
Do you have some way to accommodate single mothers to help them take care?
We currently have a fourplex housing unit that the priority use of that fourplex housing unit is for single parents with children coming to Avtech to receive training. While that works great, our need for more housing is quite intense. And we are able to accommodate only about 8% of the families that come to receive training, where one of the parents are coming, or both parents are coming to receive training here at Avtech. And so one of our highest priorities is to pursue more available, affordable housing for our families that are coming to Avtech.
Thank you.
Along that line, Fred and I have been working with Alaska Housing Finance. I'm trying to put together a package that might accommodate that. Our first barrier we ran into was the project came in about 200 times higher than we thought it was going to be initially, so we had to regroup. I will be asking this committee for some planning money so that they can put together a program. They have the land and things, we just need to put together a program to finance that. Senator Sharp, you have a question?
200 times, you don't want to build a...
Oh, I don't know,
deal.
I just didn't
want
guess.
To build a suit
yeah,
yeah.
It was a pretty high number, anyway. So.
Yeah, I was wondering on the application for from individuals that want to get into the school. First of all, how many total do you have active students in the school? Your average total?
Would that be an annual total?
Yeah.
Annually, we're serving approximately 385 full-time students and approximately 1,100 part-time students.
Those 1,100, do they actually show up in and go through some short courses, or how does that work?
A majority of them would be receiving short training courses here in Seward, although we do deliver programs elsewhere around the state. We have a classroom in Anchorage, and we use a variety of facilities around the state and deliver programs, put instructors on planes, and we're delivering some automotive mechanical training in St. Paul, for instance, this week as we speak. And so we do deliver training programs, short-term training programs, in every region of the state.
Okay, I guess probably my final question is on when you're scoring applications, the scoring system for applications on who gets admitted, is it a uniform scoring system for all applicants, or is there bonus points for particular groups of applicants, or how does it work?
Actually, our programs are enrolled on a first-come, first-served basis.
Are you over-enrolled on all of them, or just some of the more technical, slight technical stuff?
No, we turn students away from every program here.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? Brad, if you'll continue with your desired results.
Certainly. What we seek to accomplish, AFTEC prepares Alaskans for employment by developing training programs that provide students with business and industry required qualifications in response to the market-driven needs for skilled and trained technicians.
Okay, continue.
Why does the program seek these accomplishments? AFTEC fills the void that exists between business and industry's need to hire skilled employees and the need for Alaskans to acquire the technical qualifications for these positions.
Okay, then the performance measures.
AFTEC tracks graduates for 1 year after graduation for job placement. And for the fiscal year 1996, the last year we have full one-year statistics for, AFTEC's graduates had a placement rate of 86%.
Questions on? Appear to be no questions.
First of all, I think your program is a great program from my personal point of view. But you do have a measurement of, you say, 96% are placed in jobs, is that correct? 86%, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and so you obviously have some kind of mechanism to measure that, right?
Yes, we call our graduates three times after they graduate, after they leave AFTEC. Mm-hmm. And the final time that we call them is 1 year to date after graduation. So we track them for a year by phone calling them three times.
Okay.
they're doing a good job.
Other questions? Appear to be none. Fred, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll go on then to Alaska Career Information Systems.
The mission for this system is to provide Alaska-specific comprehensive career guidance system. And this system is unique because it does have Alaska-specific information, and it is a collaborative effort with the Department of Labor.
Go ahead.
Under the activities,
the committee went over this with Department of Labor a little bit, so I think
kind of duplicating here a little bit.
Under the activities, our staff work to create, maintain, and update the system constantly throughout the year and prepare it for subsequent years. They market the system, and they also train those who contract for the system on how to use the system and help troubleshoot through problems that may occur while using the system. The desired results would be to increase the availability of the Alaska Career Information System to the public. Performance measures we've included are increasing the number of sites as well as increasing the number of users.
How do you plan on increasing the number of sites? Basically, how do you become a site? Let's start with that.
A site would contact us and ask to purchase the system for 1 year through a contractual arrangement. We actually invoice service providers and bill them, and they pay. We plan to increase marketing and also to make access available on the internet. It'll probably still be used through software for a while, but we're moving towards the internet and have a limited version of access on internet right now.
I think that's a worthy measure to increase number of sites, but I'm just curious who your customers are. I mean, how all the school districts are already on, is my understanding.
Not all school districts, but many of them, probably close to 40 different districts, have access. You'll also find access in the employment centers, some correctional centers, some adult basic education programs, libraries, and other post-secondary institutions.
Would it be a good assumption to think that, let's say, Seward or some community that has a couple areas already with already recognized sites, that the rest of the people wouldn't just go use that site?
That occurs to a large degree, and people do use access through the employment centers. But it is a tool that is used often, and there may be a need for more than one site in a community to serve those who need to use it.
Okay. Any questions on this program?
Senator. Well, I have a question. Where does the service exist? If I want to use it, where do I go?
If you wanted to use it right now, you could go to the employment center. You could contact our office, and we would tell you where it is in any particular community so that you could access it. You may be able to find it in the local library. We are moving to get it into libraries or adult basic education centers.
And what's the difference between this information and what is provided by the employment service of the Department of Labor?
Actually, the information, what it is it takes information, Madam Chair, if I may, from both the Department of Education and the Department of Labor integrates raw data and numbers into an information system so that an individual who's looking for, say, information on a training program may get some of that information as compiled through the Department of Education. However, they may say, if I go through this training program, and this is the occupation I'd be prepared for, what kind of wages would be available to me, where would the employment opportunities be, that would be the kind of information that would come from that system that would be provided through the Department of Labor. I think that may be something through the University of Alaska Fairbanks Teacher Placement Center. Exactly. It is not this. So you could look up information about the teaching profession and the number of jobs and wages.
Yes, Senator.
Thank you. Follow up on my previous question. I think that the information is important, but I guess I'm confused about why we have an access system. DOE, where in the Department of Labor we have both the research and analysis folks and the NIOCC, and certainly the NIOCC disseminates occupational information and research and analysis, which pulls it together. Is your information what they're disseminating, and if so, why aren't you all in the same place?
I guess, yes, the answer to the question is yes, it's the same information, and the system would not be comprehensive without both sources of information, and the reason that they're housed in separate locations is essentially you've got education. What they provide best in terms of programs of training and study is understood through the education department and therefore collected in that context, in that arena, and then the labor market information, number of job openings, the projections that come through the Department of Labor come from them. And I guess given the delivery of the system, it's probably transparent to most users of the system where people are located in terms of how the information is prepared and delivered.
Other questions? Okay, let's move on to adult basic education.
The mission of the Adult Basic Education Program is to provide basic skills instructions to adults who need to improve their educational skills in order to seek, gain, and maintain employment.
Okay, let me ask a few questions here. I read through quite a bit of the preamble to this one also. Is the goal to for everyone to try to achieve a GED?
That may not be the goal. Each year, approximately 2,000 students going through our programs do receive GEDs. It may not be the goal that someone comes into the program with. They may be non-readers, and their first goal would be to read. They could have other employment-related goals. Eventually, they may not get a GED, but many of our students do.
How many organizations provide this service?
There are statewide 20 different programs providing adult basic education services that are funded through these state and federal funds.
What would be an example of a program? Compare a couple of them, so I know what you mean by when you say different programs.
The Southeast, we fund programs based on regions of the state. There's a southeast region that is funded to serve Juneau, Ketchikan, and some of the communities in southeast Alaska. The Anchorage program serves primarily the Anchorage area. There is a program funded in Barrow to serve Barrow and communities in the North Slope.
Okay. And each region has its own program. Is that where you get this from?
Yeah.
So, and is the goal of each region that different, that you have to call it 20 programs instead of 20 regions?
Actually, there are 13 regions, and then there are six other related programs. Oh, 13 regions. Would you repeat your question?
Well, it's right. I think I know where you're going with that. So we have no direct tie-in back to GEDs. I mean, it's one of your performance measures, I guess, to increase the number of GEDs. In reading through this, I guess I was confused with how one of the benchmarks or one of the qualifications is for you to, the individual, to increase or to meet their education goal. And apparently you fund whatever that means, to meet an education goal. And GED apparently is not a part of that goal in some cases. So how do you determine what an education goal is of an individual?
When students arrive in the program, staff work with the student to determine what the goals are. And if a non-reader arrives in the program, one of the first goals is to work on the reading, which would lead then possibly to other areas, which could then lead to a GED. But they determine those goals up front and work with the student on them.
And how many students a year, about?
Last year we had 6,900 full-time students and approximately 5,000 part-time students.
What is a full-time student?
Student who participates at least 12 hours in the program.
On a yearly basis, he only has only 12 hours?
At least 12 hours.
At least 12 hours. Okay. Let me see. I think that I'll let you continue. Is there any other question? Any questions on the mission statement itself? I don't think. Continue on then with the activities. I guess we covered some of that, but go ahead and go through it.
There are two major activities performed by staff in the Division of Teaching and Learning Support. We actually review the transcripts for those who have tested to receive GEDs and issue the diplomas. We also issue and administer the grants, which again is an ongoing all-year process of drafting RFPs, reviewing the applications and approving them, providing ongoing technical assistance, monitoring for compliance, reporting and processing and paying the bills.
Walk me through an application process. You don't look at all the 11,000 applications, I wouldn't think. Your providers do that?
GED transcripts?
Not GED, but you have, lack of a better word, you have caseworkers that students sit down with, and they work on their education goals, and then someone makes a determination if that qualifies for funding through this. Is that correct?
Funding is determined for each region based on a formula that was implemented this year, based on census data of the numbers of individuals 16 years and over who have less than a high school education.
prominent in statute or regulation?
It is in neither. In 1991, we went through a federal review of the program, and it was a recommendation at that time that the state needed to move to some sort of an equitable process for distributing funding.
So how does this tie in with ERIC?
It is one of the programs mentioned in the ERIC legislation as falling under the purview of the ERIC.
So this set of qualifications or regulations have nothing to do with what ERIC's doing now? It's a separate...
There are federal regulations related to adult basic education. There are no adult basic education regulations related to the ERIC, but the ERIC serves as the advisory committee for this program.
Does the federal law then allow for flexibility to target this more toward accomplishing GEDs than, let's say, personal education goals?
It stresses the use of the funds to assist those in need of gaining the skills needed for employment.
So would you have a direct... Someone goes through the course, are you making sure they have employment afterwards? Someone completes a course under adult basic education, are they then tracked to going to work?
No, there is not a follow-up system.
So we don't really know if they're obtaining employment based upon what
we have.
We're assuming that because they get to another level of education that they're more employable. Would that be?
What we have is self-reported data annually by students and by people in the programs that have indicated last year 783 individuals reported that they gained employment. But we do not have anything that measures and follows each student.
Yes, Senator Pierce.
Why do we have the policy of open entry, open exit?
That is mentioned in the federal legislation. It also allows for adults who are in the program to attend courses, classes, when they are able. If they are working, classes are provided at times that are convenient for an adult learner. And that's
a flexible course schedule. That's not open entry, open exit. Open entry, open exit means you can come and go whenever you want, and there will never be a way to judge whether we're serving people adequately or well, or you know who's going to be there.
Madam Chair, the students are attended by instructors in the program. They have files. They have measurements of progress in the file by the instructor. They have plans and goals that are determined that they are working on. So if they were to drop in, come back when it was a convenient time, they would pick up where they had left off. There is a process for tracking students while they're in the program.
Maybe you can spend just a moment on the formula. Are we targeting this for people that have not graduated from high school?
Yes, that would be our target.
Is that the only target group that's
primarily
the major? I don't know if it's the major qualification. In some of the preamble, I read the words that this should be targeted to underrepresented groups. What does that mean?
I don't have a specific definition for underrepresented groups.
Part of the federal law. But I mean, can you be in adult basic education if you graduated from high school? Can you, or do you qualify?
Technically, you do not qualify, but occasionally we do have students who come in with specific needs, basic skills needs, but that is not primarily our target group. We target adults 60 and over who are not enrolled in secondary school.
So if I was a computer whiz and there was a new program out, I would qualify if I went to a course that taught this, no matter what my level of education was?
Those aren't the kind of courses that are found in adult basic education programs. They are much more basic. Something related to computers would be more of a computer literacy focus, not higher level programs or systems used.
Bad example, I guess. Is there an upper age limit?
No, there is not.
Senator Parnell.
I had the opportunity to visit one of the ABE programs in Anchorage this last fall and have a better understanding than I did of what you try to do. And it was very clear to me that as part of the mission, it was in order to seek, gain, and maintain employment to get them to that point. I mean, even down to a room with clothes that they interview in. And I mean, so there is a heavy emphasis on employment, and I think that's good. I am a little concerned about the lack of measures, though, in success in obtaining employment within a particular time frame after leaving the program or being in the program. And I wonder, do you do any, I just want to clarify, do you do any data collection at all related to success obtaining and maintaining jobs?
Only the annual self-reported data, and that does indicate the students who are either getting a job or getting a better job as a result of.
And what kind of a response rate do you get with that?
Of the 6,900 students, we had 783 self-report employment or improved employment.
6,900 that have left?
They may not all have left the program, but students may be in the program for longer than a year. It may take them much longer to achieve their goal, especially if they are working and have families. They are coming when they can to continue to work towards that goal. So not all of those 6,900 students come into and leave the program within the given program year.
So would a good measure, you're saying some of them are getting jobs while they're in the program and continuing in the program.
Correct.
Okay, and then some of them get jobs after leaving ABE. So how could you frame a measure? I mean, I originally had thought of, you know, you can look at those who self-report and figure out whether that's accurate or not, but you can figure a percent increase in those who obtain employment within 90 days of leaving the program. That doesn't cover those in the program who are obtaining employment, but somehow that's what we're trying to get at, is some measure of figuring out whether this program is helping them seek, gain, and maintain employment, which I think it is, but we have to be able to demonstrate it. That's all.
It's probably going to have to set up different categories,
yeah,
type of students within it, and then have a measurement based on that category, because one size doesn't fit all.
No.
I think we need to work on that.
But you need some kind of, you know, measuring tool.
Senator Parnell, we have explored in the past the use of wage data files through the Department of Labor and have not gotten too far down the road in establishing that. Additionally, the federal U.S. Department of Education is mandating that we do come up with benchmarks to be used in FY 99 next year.
Is there that's interesting. I mean, that may be an even more simple way. If an employer is paying unemployment taxes on them, is that information available to you? Not the amount necessarily that's being paid, but just the fact that unemployment taxes are paid on an individual. And so can you submit it, 6,900 names or 780 names? Yeah.
If we had identifiers, then we would have to deal with any confidentiality issues prior to doing that.
But Department of Labor shepherds could release a report. You could turn over names and identifiers to them. They could release a report to you.
It would have to be...
Of this thing that, saying that on this list, if you gave us a list of 50 on this list, you've got 30 that are currently employed. I mean, you could, at least you have that much, right? I'm just trying to help you get to the measure.
In is under the federal review, are we looking at what the classification of a full-time student is? The 12 hours is what it, is that going to increase or decrease?
The act should be reauthorized soon, but there has been no talk about that particular definition changing. So we anticipate changes whenever it is reauthorized. Reauthorization seems to be slow with this program as well as vocational education.
Other questions? Okay. I think we'll leave it there. We'll work on that performance measures that Senator Parnell was talking about. Is there a copy of the federal, whatever they're trying to change it to now, the proposed legislation or guidelines, is that out for review?
I will check with staff. I've not.
That is, if you would get me a copy of what you have there, it would be... You know, the feds are also considering combining about 80 programs into one block grant to the states. Is this part of that, or do you know, are you aware of?
In the most recent configuration of block granting, I have seen adult ed is not included in that. It was more of the Improving America's Schools Act programs, but not adult ed. But that configuration seems to change daily.
Well, I think we're all in favor of this program, but measurable results is something we're all trying to look for. So if we can, you know, within the confines of what Department of Labor and information you get back from them, maybe there is something we can work out to get a little bit better measures on what's happening.
All the customer satisfaction.
Well, yeah, you could say
I mean,
that.
That's ultimately what we're trying to do, frankly.
How many, what was the number of GEDs out of the 11,000? Just,
Senator Jorgensen, I'm not sure what you mean by 11,000, but, oh, of the full and part-time.
I had 900,
okay.
4,000.
Well, good, you passed.
Thank you. If you want the, it's 11,921 if you want the exact number. But
2,111 last year.
And you made this a little off the subject, but along the same lines. Are the new standards that we're looking at for, and the feds are looking at for reading, writing, and so forth, will the GED change, the testing change to reflect new standards, or are we going to have a different standard for GEDs, or do you know?
The GED test is an interesting thing. It is developed, created by the GED testing service, which is a private nonprofit group. They redo the test about every 10 years. The last time it was redone, I believe, was about 1988. So they are due for a revamping, and I'm sure they will include the current thoughts on standards and what they are.
Okay. Thanks. Any other questions? Okay. We're off to school to work.
Okay.
Covered a lot of this, but if you'll just start again with the mission statement.
Sure. The mission of School to Work is really to establish a business, education, and community partnership so that we create a comprehensive school to work system so all Alaska students, when they leave school, are prepared for the world of work and lifelong learning. I think this program essentially exists as a result of a grassroots effort not only in Alaska but nationally. Very strongly employer-driven, wanting students who come from our education system to be able to be successful in the world of work and the ever-changing work requirements. So we need students who have that flexibility to learn, and therefore the lifelong learning is why it's such a critical portion of our mission. School to Work, I think, is really unique because it is a system approach. And I earlier had used the term venture capital. And when this legislation was passed in Washington, D.C., the notion is it's a seven-year initiative, and it's designed to go in, and I think this is what makes it so unique, is it's to get people to look at what they're already doing a bit differently so that students do come out being able to apply what they're learning in school. So what I mean by that is teachers who are already teaching students are saying, okay, if you're learning your math, why not learn it in the context of your geometry, in the context of a construction project as a carpenter, and understand those connections to the world of work. It's also designed for system change to get employers who would like to become more involved in the education system and help, not only in providing work-based learning experiences, but also in sitting on advisory councils and those kinds of activities, as well as it's for students. So students, as customers, say, I want to know how I'm supposed to use this information when I leave school. So I think those are the unique aspects of the School to Work initiative.
Now this is, you said initially you started this in 1996, or the federal government started?
In Alaska. It started in 1994 nationally. Legislation was passed. Alaska received funds in November of 96.
What is the effort, or how much money are we going to get from the feds to initiate this over that seven-year period? I know that this year you're looking at Senator Pierce isn't here. I can talk numbers. No, I'm just curious how this looks like $1.5 million that we're talking about this year. But is that something that increases over a period of time?
It's a unique funding scheme as well. If you look at how much money Alaska will have realized at the end of the total seven-year initiative, which would include 2.5, almost 3 years of developmental grant money, as well as three grants that have gone not to the state but to local communities directly through the national office, will have, at the end of 7 years, roughly $8.6 million invested in building this comprehensive system.
So you envision any student being eligible for this program, or are we targeting the ones that are perceived to not go on to a secondary school?
It's not an eligibility or an entitlement kind of approach. What we're trying to say is every student who sits in a classroom, in fact, has the opportunity to apply the math that they're learning. Perhaps for one student it could be the context of a construction project. For another student it could be in the context of a health or medical occupation. So we want all students to have things like career development, career exploration, as they understand the kinds of occupations they may or may not be interested in. It's as much as of their learning process. So we would like all students to have that opportunity, as well as to have some sort of work-based learning experience outside of the four walls of a classroom. And that could be in the area of, say, an apprenticeship kind of learning experience, a service learning experience, job shadow. Right now in Alaska, very many of our communities and our local partnerships are engaged in getting students out, and they can learn just as much by what they don't want to do as they see something in the world of work as what they want to do. So that's what we're looking at. And it is for all students.
And one last question on this, and then we'll go back to the How are you integrating this into the public school system? Is there you sign up for it, or is this available to all of them, or what?
Essentially what happened is when we got our first year of grant money, which was $1.3 million from the federal government, the federal law says that 70% of that goes directly to local partnerships. We sent out over 1,500 requests for proposals to schools, to universities, to employer organizations, to organized labor, to Native organizations, you name it. We had a very comprehensive listing. We ended up with 36 or 37 responses. All but, say, 3 or 4 were from the education system. So it's designed not to be just an education-based initiative. Really, that focus is on the community, the employer, as well as the education system coming together.
Senator Phillips.
Sent out 1,500, got 36 back.
Mm-hmm. Well, what we did is working within the Job Training Partnership Act regional economic labor market structure, what we said is part of our federal grant and our rollout plan is that we would fund at least one partnership in each of 8 regions across the state. 3 of those regions are single school districts. What we did with the grants that came in and the grant review team is we did not in the first year fund everyone that had applied. because we are building a system, local partnerships had to score at least 50% in all of 10 elements as opposed to just the highest score. So if they fell short and didn't get, say, a particular but critical component of building this system, they may not have gotten the funding. And then when they receive their funding, they're getting their funding for 3 years with the recognition that it takes time to engage in this kind of system change.
I'm assuming that some of these are school districts, right?
Actually, right now at this point, we have 30 local partnerships that account for 32 school districts. Yes, I do. I'd be happy to provide you with. Mm-hmm. You bet. You bet.
Now, how do we divide up the pie, then, to one of your partners? I'm assuming that there's some money that goes to them if they participate in the program.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Local partnership has... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's right. I'm just curious how that works.
It is essentially... In the first year, people applied within a range of dollars, and then as we brought the partnerships on, we allocate the funds based on numbers of students, numbers of schools, and access to employers. So we use a combination and allocation model that takes into account those three factors, given that your costs will be marginally higher in those communities that have more students. Yet there are still certain core system building activities that you must engage in.
I'm probably jumping ahead of you here, but the money, these folks are providing a service, in this case a school to work service. So what are you paying for whatever money you give them? Is it for job shadowing, or is it for, or maybe it's a combination of all of these? Is it to pay for the kids to go to school, work there, subsidize that?
There are very few things federally that the funds cannot be used for. Paying to subsidize wages is one of those things that it cannot be used for. What we asked people to do, and we made planning grants available initially, and they had to develop their local school-to-work plan that takes into account the required elements of having a system: high academic standards, career development, work-based learning, and connecting the activities between the school and the world of work. And as they develop their plan, they have each, because it's tailored to local community, local labor market needs, what they choose to use the money on to build those components of systems varies across each of the 30 partnerships.
Do you have that in some type of per partner, a little breakdown of what you're paying for them to do?
I haven't prepared a brief summary. I'm hoping with the next round of grants, what we've asked them to do is give us that brief summary so that we can compile that so people have a good sense.
Give us an idea of the majority of what the money's going for.
I would
is
say...
administrators?
No. The federal law caps administration, saying no more than 10% may be dedicated to administration. And really what we encourage them to do is not use the money to operate programs but to build systems. So many of them are building local partnerships with employers and education for the first time in communities. They're coming together at the table and having a discussion. What are the education needs? What are the workforce needs? What can we do? A lot of the money goes into teacher, in-service professional development, to get teachers who are already teaching to understand, okay, how can I infuse the world of work into my classroom? And there are several classes, one even in Alaska, that's been very popular nationally to help accomplish that objective. I would say career development is another area, because in a lot of communities there's not necessarily a strong component of career development. They're using the money to help shore that up so that in future years, when the dollars aren't there, students will have access to a career development program.
Any questions on the mission statement? Let's go on to activity. We probably went over a lot of this, but it was important to learn that for me so I can think about your mission statement. So just go ahead and run through the activities.
Okay. Activities, the first list is really essentially involved in administering the grants and the contracts and that kind of thing. Where we really spend a lot of our energy is in providing assistance to the local school-to-work partnerships to make these systems sustainable. That includes things like we have brought people in and have provided training to local partnerships on how do you train employers and nonprofit agencies who want to be a workplace mentor to bring a student into their workplace and work with them so that they have a successful school or working experience. So we're trying to build that capacity at the local level. We're in the process of trying to identify a school-to-work management information system whereby you can take the number of students that are in your community, in your local partnership, and be able to match them with employers who have work-based learning experiences, or match teachers with employers who are willing to bring those teachers into the workplace for work-based experience. We have also been involved in infusing career development in the curriculum, showing people how you don't have to invest huge sums of money, but if you just get that career development component into the classroom, how that can help students understand how they're going to apply what they know and are able to do to the world of work. We've also put together, I think, a remarkable publication called Giving Students Hope and Skills in the 21st Century, and it's really designed for the parent community to understand what the realities of the labor market are and how they can help their students succeed. So we're really trying to come at it from a lot of different angles. We're not focusing just on the employer community or just on the parent community, but we really try to make sure all means all.
Okay. I've asked this question of all the other programs. If the funding sources, the federal government, I guess, right now, is this under a larger grant, or is this directly related to just school to work?
School to work is a separate initiative, and because when I use the word venture capital, it sunsets at the end of 7 years, and our primary goal, which is a perfect segue into what our priority and desired result is that school to work does live on after these federal funds are gone, that we've been successful in changing the way people think and do business to the point that students are making those connections of what they're learning in school and how they'll apply that to the world of work.
So maybe can we fill out a grant application to use Carl Perkins money for school to work or another program to earmark other federal money into this? That's sort of what I was getting at when we had this conversation earlier about the flexibility within the other federal grant programs.
Let me say that school to work will live on through programs like Carl Perkins, through apprenticeship training kinds of programs, through service learning. We'll have to have those particular programs in place so that the students have the opportunity to apply what they're doing to a work context. And that's not only at the secondary level. That includes the post-secondary. You have to make those connections at the post-secondary level as well. So if those systems and programs aren't in place, then school to work would not live on.
Okay. Results?
Our results, essentially twofold, I would say priority is to be sure that the local partnerships have all the essential components, again, the high academic achievement, the career development, the connections to post-secondary, the work-based learning opportunities, so that they are, in fact, offering that on an ongoing basis to all students at the community level. Statewide, our immediate goal is to be sure that these local partnerships are in a position to sustain these systems after our funding is gone. And the way the feds have funded us is we actually have decreasing amounts in the third, fourth, and fifth year. So more goes directly to local partnerships, less at the administrative level. So we're really focusing heavily this year on helping them provide technical assistance and strategic planning to sustain their systems.
All right. Performance measures?
Performance measures. At this point, I think we had talked a little bit earlier, they're really what I would call more progress measures and progress indicators, who are we serving, who's being touched by school to work. We're just in the process of summarizing some information. I do have some preliminary statistics for our local partnerships, our 30 partnerships, which essentially account for 90% of all students in the state. At the end of really the first year, we had 18% of the 9 through 12th graders were involved in work-based learning experiences. And I think that's exciting because to me that represents a baseline. And if what we want is all students to ultimately have a work-based learning experience, we see how far we have to go to be sure those students are making those connections. In terms of number of employers, our preliminary data indicate that we have 1 in 10 of Alaska's 17,000 employers involved in building school-to-work systems or helping with school-to-work systems in local communities across the state. So that would include your private nonprofits, your employers under the unemployment insurance, et cetera. Those are the kinds of things that we're looking at. I mean, I could go on, but what we ultimately want to do is move to a system of performance measures to be able to show, and one of the things we'd like to do is take this management information system, and of course the key here would be having Social Security numbers, but Alaska has a remarkable mechanism in place through our occupational database that if we can take those people that have participated in school to work kinds of experiences and cross-match that with the wage file, we would be able to tell how well students are doing on down the line, but we have that long lag because of student preparation time. So I think that's kind of our long-term vision.
Are you going out with that RFP yearly to try to find more partners?
No. At this point, what we've done is decide that instead of watering down the number of partnerships to the point that there's not a sufficient amount of money for anybody to accomplish anything, we'll stick with our 30 local partnerships and hope they get good, sound, secure systems. And so those partnerships that have funding are the ones that will be funded through the next, when we have 3.5 years left. Two funding years, yeah.
Questions? Okay, this we'll come back and visit this. I think after I get the list of your partners you have now and a little better idea of some of the what we're paying for and benchmarks, I think it'll spur on other conversations. But we'll do that at more of the subcommittee level instead of the full finance committee level.
Great.
When we finalize this performance measure. So if there's no other questions, then I think you guys are out of the hot chair.
Thank you.
We'll start with the next group, which is ATAP. Where's my list? Alaska Work Programs. Nordland. We'll be looking at the Alaska Work Program and Welfare to Work Services, both under Mr. Nordland's purview, I guess. Which one do you want to take first? Alaska Work Program?
Morning Center. Actually, they're both the same. So.
Oh, are they? Okay. Well, then we've got. Just go ahead and identify yourself for the record and
sure.
Also the.
I'm Jim Nordland, the director of the Division of Public Assistance, and Ron Crer is with me too as well. He's my assistant and has worked over the years on our development of performance measures for our new Welfare to Work program.
Okay. So these are the same program, Alaska?
Yes, actually, Alaska Work Program is a component in our budget. Part of that component is an RSA to the Department of they are our primary partner in actually the administration of the program. And so I think you're probably looking at two sheets there, one from our side of the budget equation and one from theirs. But it is essentially an RSA to them. We, in essence, purchase services from the Department of Labor to provide services to our clients.
And that was more or less your mission statement.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Before we go any farther, as I want to ask a few questions, and then again, this will help put it in my mind as to what we're doing. This is not necessarily any order, it skips all over the place, but how many agencies are provided? Are providing services for the welfare to work. Maybe agencies isn't the right word, but as we heard in the last couple of days, almost everyone that comes to the table has a welfare to work component within there. And then here's the major component, I guess, right here. So
right.
Do you have any idea how many other agencies are providing a similar service?
Well, that's a good question, Senator. I don't have by any means an exhaustive list here, but I can tell you offhand, the primary agency is the Department of Labor that shares the administration of the program with us. But we also do a number of grants and contracts with community organizations. And I don't have the list with me, but I can tell you that, for instance, in Anchorage, our community partners there are the University of Alaska's community and College of
Community and Technical College, Cook Inlet Tribal Council, Nine Star Enterprises, in Fairbanks, the Fairbanks Native Association in Juneau, Tlingit Haida Central Council, and the Southeast Regional Resource Center in Mat-Su, Human Resources Incorporated. I'd be glad to get you a list.
I have that list. I wasn't quite interested in that level of detail, but more on the broad sense, like the STEP program, the testimony said they have welfare to work component. JPTA has a huge component. Of course, this program, Alaska Work Program, is a huge component, or to welfare to work, whatever we're calling this. And that's as far as my list went, but it seemed like almost all of these programs that we had before us have some type of a component in there, who then have subcontractors or providers or whatever. And that's what I was trying to get at, is how many different agencies have the same component in it called welfare to work.
The way I look at what we do, Senator, is we purchase services for our clients. And in some cases, we would purchase services from JTPA program, in some cases, community providers. And I really can't speak to how they account for funds that they might receive from us and then provide services to our clients. They're all correct. They all do provide some level of service to welfare recipients. But I can't tell you right now in detail exactly how they show that in their various budgets.
But STEP doesn't receive funding from you.
No.
And neither does JPTA. But they have the same component within there,
right,
as welfare to work. So I certainly have those two identified pretty clearly, but I think there are others. And that's, again, what...
Yeah, I'd be glad to try to get a list together. I can't recall them all offhand, but for instance, with JTPA, we don't have in our budget money for job training directly. If we're going to get job training for welfare recipients, we, for the most part, send them over to the JTPA program for specific occupational skill training. And so there is some money in our budget for that purpose, but not very much.
Let's see. Somewhere in this, I have defined a federally funded work activity. Is that the 20 hours a week part of the federal statute?
Yes, sir. That's part of the definition. The federally recognized work activity are those things, those activities that a welfare recipient can be in and be counted as part of our work participation rate. There's actually 13 different ones. The main ones, of course, and the most important one is employment. Your straight ahead wage paying jobs is considered a work activity. But then there's also on the job training, community work experience, or community service. In some cases, there is some training that's allowed as a work activity, but it is limited under the law.
I'm trying to get just a mission statement. Is any of your money used to subsidize employment?
We have traditionally had a small amount of money that's gone into on-the-job training. We've de-emphasized that recently, but we would like to, because of basically funding limitations, we would like to re-emphasize that now as our program matures from basically just a work-first approach of getting somebody into a job, initial job first. We wanted to try to help them improve their chances of getting better employment, and we want to do that in a job-related setting, and OJT is the best, probably the best way of doing that. So, which is basically a subsidy to employers to hire a welfare recipient and provide them with training opportunities while they're on the job.
In your mission statement, you have to provide the service to people on public assistance, but don't you have a component if there's someone about ready to come on public assistance that isn't quite there that you can go in and help, or is that not in your...
It's
one of your priorities, increased percentage of clients who retain paid employment. So I'm just wondering if your mission statement is pretty narrowly defined. According to that, if you're not paying them on public assistance, they don't get any of your services.
That's, right now, that's true. The way, now what you might be thinking of is that with our child care program, which really isn't incorporated here as a welfare to work service, we do provide funds, particularly through the PASS 2 and PASS, well, part of the PASS 3 program, which is administered by DCRA, which is basically low-income child care for low-income people to help them stay on the job and not go, you know, go on to public assistance. So that program does help people stay off of welfare, but it's not reflected here in this worksheet because that's not a component under the Welfare to Work Services.
Well, I skipped ahead of a little bit because under your results, it is stated that your increase of clients who retain public or paid employment.
And right.
I'm assuming. Oh, I see what you're saying. If they're on child care, they would still qualify. If they're under paid employment, we were paying for child care, they'd still be under public assistance. I guess, is that what you're saying?
Well, I guess what I'm saying, maybe I can explain these desired results here. And these do apply to people that are on public assistance. The first one, which is increased percentage of ATAP clients who have paid employment, those are people who are on welfare but working. Right now, so what we want to do is take people who are not working at all are on welfare and at least move them into that initial job. If you move into a job that's minimum wage in Alaska, you're still going to be on public assistance. So as a first step to moving off of public assistance, we want to get them into an initial job. There's probably the welfare check will go down somewhat because they're receiving paid employment. But that's the first step to ultimate self-sufficiency, which is off of public assistance entirely. So that's what we're trying to do there with the first desired result. The second one is to increase the number of people who increase their job retention. Statistics show nationally that something like 50% of welfare recipients lose their jobs within the first month. So we want to have services to help them retain that job once they're in it. And then the third measure is to try to improve the quality of those jobs that recipients move into.
And then back to, that was my original question, but you explained it, but I'm going to ask it one more time. You have to be on some sort of public assistance to come under the Alaska Work Program.
Right.
Any questions on the mission statement?
Just one question, Senator. Are we going to go through both?
No, we'll just do the Alaska Work Program. And actually, I had some other questions.
I was a little confused with respect to what the other sheet represents. Is this the Department of Labor's write-up, and this is the Health
Yes, and
write-up?
Rebecca Gammes is here, and she might want to join us, actually, if you have questions, since she's, she'd like to have her come up.
That's fine.
Yeah, okay.
Before, I don't have questions on what was prepared by Health Social Services, but I do on what was prepared by Department of Labor. So that's
we'll get to that. Let's go into the performance measures. Come on, go right up here. And just identify yourself for the record, and we won't have to.
For the record, my name is Rebecca Gomez, and I'm the Director of the Employment Security Division at the Alaska Department of Labor.
Okay. We'll go to measures then.
The bottom of the page?
Yes.
Okay. The series of measures here do directly reflect upon the desired results, the three desired results ahead of that, and the percentage, the first one is the percentage of clients with earned income, including self-employment. That is a percentage of a fixed number. The fixed number is basically the number of people who are on the ATAP program. We want to increase the percentage of folks on public assistance who are working. The second one is the percentage of cases closed due to earnings, including self-employment. Now, that's basically people who have left welfare and gone to work. We want to increase that percentage as well. The third one is a measure of job retention, and that is the percentage of clients employed for, and it's measured at intervals of 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, and 18 months. The last three are measures of the quality of the job that recipients would be moving into. The first one is the percentage of clients with employers who pay health insurance. The second one is the percentage of clients with hours, with basically that have more than just a part-time job. They're earning more than 30 hours a week, or working more than 30 hours a week. And the last one is the average hourly wage of placement, an indication of obviously how well they're paid in that job.
Okay, I only have a question on the third one up, percent of clients with employer-provided health insurance. What are you doing in your activities that would make this a performance measure? I think it's a worthy goal, and it's probably good to know that number, but I don't know how you achieve a
well, it, in an economy, it relatively as good as it is right now, at least, you know, where job seekers have some choice in the employment that they would seek, and that our case managers have some latitude in encouraging recipients to take one job over the other. We would like to have them take jobs from employers to provide health insurance. It reduces our dependence on Medicaid for that family. And but to the extent, if there's not employment out there that provides health insurance, well, then we'll have to settle for employment that doesn't. It's just that it's a measure that we're trying to increase over time. And as long as employers know that, it could create some incentive out there in the employment community to provide health care coverage for their employees. It would be a small measure, a small way of doing that. But.
Yes, Senator Parnell.
So are you actively recruiting and helping them seek out employers with health insurance? I'm trying to get how that measure is related to yours. I mean, I understand how the whole department's impacted if they don't find an employer with health insurance, but how that relates to the program.
This is I should say that this is a measure that is looking at as much of a vision at the future than what we're practically doing right now. But I mean, the way it would boil down, Senator, is if our case manager